Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vada, Bhakti Vedanta ki, Raja Raja Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridhar Maharaj ki, enjoy the talk of Prabhupada. So what did we discuss in the previous class? Any other points?
We were, according to the Siddhanta of Prabhupada, we were in the spiritual world, but misuse of our free will we have come down. But what is important is Prabhupada's conclusion that not that from where we have come we should be worried, how to go back to the spiritual world should be our focus.
Very good sound. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. So, we see at the end of the sixth canto, we hear that Diti, who is the mother of the Daikshas and the Danavas, the demons, then she is performing the Pumsavana vow. Why is she performing the Pumsavana vow? Yeah, because she wanted to seek revenge against Indra, against the demigods, because Lord Vishnu had killed her two children, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. And because they had been killed by Vishnu and he sided with the demigods, she was blaming Indra, and therefore she wanted Indra to be killed, so she performed the vow for the Pumsavana vow. But while performing the vow, because she was instructed by her husband, whose name was Kashyapa, Kashyapa instructed that you perform the vow, but you do it in a Vaishnava way. So by performing Vaishnava vratas, then she became purified of her enmity towards Indra. So that's how the sixth canto finishes. In the seventh canto, the beginning, then it is asked by Parikshit Maharaj, why is it that the Lord has favoured the demigods as opposed to the demons, if he is equal to all living entities? Now, of course, he understands the answer, but he simply wants to inform us what the actual reason is. So then it is explained that the Lord is actually equal to all living entities. He is above the three modes of material nature, but naturally he is reciprocal with his devotees and he will punish the demons, because that is Krishna's prerogative, or that is the correct way for a person to act, and Krishna is the original person, so he acts in the most correct way. So then it is described that although he kills the demons, Krishna benefits anyone who comes in contact with him. So they receive the benefit of being killed by Krishna and they merge into his Brahman effulgence, which is called Sayuja Mukti. So they are benefited. They are liberated from this material world and all of their karma. So everyone who contacts Krishna, whether they are inimical like a demon or whether they are friendly like a devotee, they receive benefit. Then it is described about how, because it is Yudhishthira says to Narada, is the conversation which Sukadeva is describing to Parikshit, is a conversation between Narada and Yudhishthira Maharaj at the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Yudhishthira saw Shishupal's Atma enter into the Brahman effulgence of Krishna. So then, Yudhishthira asked him, how is it that a pure devotee could become so inimical towards Krishna? And how is it that pure souls such as the Kumaras could curse Jayan Vidya? So then there's a very basic description of their fall into the material world and their incarnations in the material world. Now tonight we'll begin chapter 2, we'll go from verses 1 to 10. And we'll hear about, in detail, we've already heard about Hiranyaksha and his death from Lord Varahadev, and now we'll hear about Hiranyakashipu and his death from Lord Nrisimha. And we will also hear about the appearance of Prahlad Maharaj. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out that the first 10 chapters of this canto describe Shuddha Bhakti. We'll see the example of pure devotional service of Prahlad Maharaj, exemplified in these first 10 chapters, and then Mishra Bhakti and Jnana will be described in the final 5 chapters, in the description of Varnashram Dhamma. And we'll also hear about the Uti, or the proclivity, or what is the word that is given for that? Uti?
Uti.
Yeah. Then what is the English translation?
Inclination.
Inclination, yeah. The inclination, how a demoniac person is demoniac because of his inborn desire to defy Krishna. And a auspicious person, a devotional person, becomes that way through association with devotees. By associating with devotees, then you develop all good qualities. Just like it is said that when the woman is pregnant, then in the last 2 months of the pregnancy, the child can hear. So the child should hear as much Bhagavatam as possible and transcendental sound vibration. And the child is, from the 7th month to the 9th month, the child is hearing in those final 2 months. And that will develop a devotional proclivity or inclination. That's how Prahlad became a devotee, because Narada was preaching to him while he was in the womb, and then he developed a devotional attitude due to Narada's mercy. Also, at the time of his birth, he was conceived in a Krishna conscious fashion. We'll explain that as the pastime in bells. Now, Srila Prabhupada was very fond of the 7th canto, and especially the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. And I was listening only a few days ago, Harisori Prabhu, he was with Prabhupada, and he actually said to Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, you are very fond of the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, I'm very. And he said, you are very much in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. Because Prahlad Maharaj, he'll say there's one verse as we go through the 7th canto. And Prahlad Maharaj says that, I have no consideration for myself. I'm only thinking of all the fools and rascals in this world who need deliverance. So Harisori Prabhu said this to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you are in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada, he accepted like that. That is Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada, of the whole Bhagavatam, practically the 7th canto was the part that he tended to focus upon and quote the most, Prahlad Maharaj's teaching. So it's a very auspicious and important part of the Bhagavatam, especially for us, who are sadhakas. Any points?
We should see Bhaktivala movie though. It's a wonderful movie which shows the whole episode of the next
anniversary. Who is a member?
It's from talking that the movie, but it's wonderful. It's a nice prayer.
It's an old movie? Or?
It's an old movie.
Okay. Maybe you can get a copy and we can.
Yeah, I can get a copy.
But we have to have popcorn. And there's a carob ice cream.
Okay.
We can make. See what we can organize. Okay. Can you hear us, Sydney? Hello, Sydney? You're not there? Sharamukhi, can you hear? Can you hear us?
Yeah, no, we can.
You can hear?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for hearing.
Thank you for speaking.
Okay. That's the part of the course which is free. Okay, so tonight we're starting from chapter 2, verse number 1 to 10. Sri Narad Muni said, "My dear King Yudhishthira, when Lord Vishnu is in the form of Varaha, the boar, killed Hiranyaksha, Hiranyaksha's brother, Hiranyakashipu, was extremely angry and began to lament." Hey, Sean. Can you put a chair in the door? Someone put a chair in the door. Because we need some cross ventilation. It's okay. Jamuna will do it. Okay. Sham, you can read the. Okay. A little bit hot.
Yudhishthira had inquired from Narada Muni why King Kashyapu was so unaware of his own son's love. Narada Muni became narrating the story by explaining how King Kashyapu had become a staunch enemy of Lord
Vishnu. Any points here? In the opening paragraph,
the envy is such a contamination that it makes even one's own father envy.
Anything else?
I think we should know the meaning of envy itself, Prabhu, because we think we know that we may not know the meaning. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that envy is that attitude in a person which makes him extremely happy when others are extremely unhappy. And equally, I become extremely unhappy when others are extremely happy. So that's the typical meaning of envy.
Good definition. Any other points? So, if one has envy towards Krishna or is disrespectful towards Krishna, one will become envious towards Krishna's devotees. So we have to analyze our own consciousness, because sometimes we become envious of other devotees. So if we are envious of other devotees, that means we are still envious of Krishna. Because originally, our envy is with Krishna. Our problem is with Krishna. So if we have a problem with anyone else, whether they're a devotee or a non-devotee, that means we are envious of Krishna. So envy is the cause of our bondage in this material world. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is manifesting from the spiritual world. And what is the nature of the spiritual world? The nature of the spiritual world is there is no envy there. Therefore, in order to become qualified to go back to Godhead, we have to become Nirmatsara, which means we are free from envy. And the Bhagavatam can only be understood by one who is free from envy. If you have envy in the heart, then you can't understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. It will remain theory. It'll still be a theoretical exercise reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. But if one develops a non-envious attitude, then one can understand the actual purport of the Bhagavatam. This is described by Sanatana Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami says that humility or dainya and prema are synonymous, which means you cannot have one without the other. A devotee cannot have love of God if he is not humble. And a devotee cannot be fully humble until he develops love for Krishna. So this is the price that we need to pay. Hands up if you want to develop love of Godhead. Okay. Hands up if you want to be fully humble. Yeah, you need to be both. You can't have one without the other. You can only advance as a devotee, or your advancement is reciprocal with how much humility you develop as a devotee. Sometimes we think that, oh, I'm becoming advanced now because I give nice classes and I lead good kirtans and other devotees respect me. But actually, the real measure in Krishna's eyes, when Krishna is assessing us, Krishna is analyzing, are we actually humble? That's what he's actually looking for. He's not looking, he's not impressed by your class. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Right? He's already given a perfect class to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's the best preacher. So why is he impressed with your class? Half the time we can't even remember the shlokas. So what's so impressive about our class? What's so impressive about our kirtan? Anyone can lead kirtan. It's not a big deal. So we become overly impressed by our abilities, the abilities that Krishna has given us, but actually what Krishna is looking for is our humility. Are we actually free from pride? Or are we looking for adulation? Or are we looking for praise after we've performed some devotional activity? The activity is meant to be for Krishna's pleasure. When we do the activity, we're meant to be doing it for Krishna's pleasure. But then afterwards, are we looking for praise for doing the activity? So that ruins the offering. Or that lessens the offering, or makes it less relishable to Krishna. You've done something, but then you ruin the offering, or you adulterate it with personal motivation. Because the definition of bhakti is that it is unalloyed. Prabhupada used this term, unalloyed devotional service. Alloy means, right, there is some mixture. Alloy means you mix the different metals together. Unalloyed means there is no adulteration to your bhakti. You're simply doing it for one reason. Why? Because it will give Krishna pleasure. And sometimes we see, this kind of bhakti. I remember one time I told you I was at Radhakund and I was chanting my japa in front of Raghunath Das Goswami's Bhajan Kutia at Radhakund. I was the only one there. And then one Bengali widow, she came around the corner and she came in front of the Bhajan Kutia and she saw the picture of Raghunath Das Goswami. And in the picture, he is chanting his japa. And the tiger is next to him, and Krishna is standing at a distance, watching, because the tiger is next to Raghunath Das Goswami. And then, in the same picture, that pastime where Radharani comes with the veil, and she's holding it over his head while he's in the hot sun, and Sanat Goswami is watching it from the other side of Radhakund. So when she came and she saw that picture, she immediately, tears poured from her eyes. And she turned around and she looked at me with a choked voice and she said, I didn't understand what she said because she was speaking Bengali, but she said, just look at Raghunath Das Goswami. Look at his, and tears would automatically come from her eyes. No pretension. Not trying to impress anyone. I was the only one there. Why was she trying to impress me? Right? But spontaneously the bhakti came. That is what attracts Krishna. Not that we're always doing it because we want to be recognized by everyone. Bhakti is not about recognition, ultimately. It is simply about, is Krishna satisfied? It's like if we're doing the aarti for the deities, sometimes we'll be in the temple and there's so many devotees there. So sometimes our consciousness, we think, oh, look, I'm doing such a nice aarti. I'm doing such a nice seva. Everyone must be recognizing me. Everyone must be absorbed in me, saying that I am there. I am the one doing their puja. I am the one doing the seva. No one cares if you're doing the seva or not. No one cares if you're doing it or not. Everyone's focused upon the deities, not focused on you. But our false ego is so consuming in our consciousness that we are thinking, oh no, it is me. And we become very self-absorbed while we're supposed to be focusing on Krishna. So when we're doing our bhakti, whether someone is there or no one is there, right, we should just be absorbed in giving Krishna pleasure. sometimes it's very sweet. Sometimes you get to do the aarti to the deities and no one's there. The quiet times of the day, very sweet. But we should see, does our consciousness remain the same whether we're in public or when we're in private? When we perform our bhakti in a private way, in our own home, in our own bhajan kutir, or whether we're publicly doing it, is it the same? Or is it motivated by recognition? I know for myself, you know, sometimes we'll get some recognition from a highly advanced Vaishnava and immediately pride comes into the consciousness. I saw this last year when I was recognized by an advanced devotee. He gave me some recognition, but immediately I became proud. So Krishna was just showing me my bhakti is impure. It is not pleasing to him yet. He's not relishing it yet. Because we're still absorbed in our own self-aggrandizement. And that is not what bhakti is about. Any points? Thank you for sharing that. Any other points?
So humility is a character which Guruji Maharaj says that it is not directly cultivated, but it's a result of few other steps. It starts with the first step in the process of contentment, that I feel satisfied in whatever situation I am in, because I am in the situation because of the mercy of the Lord, thinking that, well, I have done so many wrong things in my life, in my previous life, but yet Krishna out of mercy has given me still a facility wherein I am in the present situation. It's like a criminal thinking about that, yes, he is going to be given a severe punishment by the judge, say, hypothetically, like 10 years rigorous imprisonment, but he finds that the judge out of compassion gives him only a 3 year simple imprisonment. So therefore, that prisoner or that criminal feels gratitude towards the judge that he has been so mean. So similarly, because I am content, why am I content? For the simple reason that I see that Lord has given out of mercy, he has given me a simple imprisonment like 3 years, but not a 10 year rigorous imprisonment. So out of that, I develop a gratitude, and because of the gratitude, I develop humility. So therefore, these are the two steps preceding before the humility as a character develops in a person. That's what Guruji Maharaj says. I think Murali Prabhupada got something else to say because he was given an alternative approach from such families.
So tell us in private. Any other points?
When a person is looking at the mother and a gold piece, it is different to him. He is success of saying he won't find it.
Yeah, well, that is pure devotional service. What Krishna is speaking about is being equal in all circumstances. That is pure devotional service.
He's not given that in any circumstances.
You see, Prabhupada, he was not bewildered. Prabhupada was always just focused on that. So that is pure devotional service. Okay. Filled with rage and biting his lips, Hiranyakashipu gazed at the sky with eyes that blazed in anger, making the whole sky smoky Thus he began to speak. Subhana, would you like to read?
As the demon is in the midst of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and inimical towards him. These were Hiranyakashipu's external bodily features as he considered how to kill Lord Vishnu and devastate his kingdom and become the Lord.
Any points?
If somebody is envious, it implies that he is actually having the other preceding five characteristics, kama, krodha, lobha, mana, moha, which leads to the mastery, according to the Bhakti Mohan.
What does Bhakti Mohan Sartre say? So where does he say that?
I've seen Bhakti Mohan Sartre's website.
Any other points? Yeah, it's a vila. It's a pastime. He's under the Lord's internal potency, the Yogamaya potency. Yeah, but still he's feeling like that. So it facilitates Krishna's pastime. But don't you try to do it. You say that to your husband? So those who rebel against Krishna, they always become conquered in due course of time. So that is the nature of the demoniac quality. The demons will always be crushed by Krishna. So Krishna says, now, Hari Pranaya Sadhana Vinashaya. Vinashaya, Vinash. Vinash means destroyed, removed. And Vinash, like that. So Krishna, he removes the demoniac propensity. Now, in Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee are in the same body. So Lord Chaitanya, he does not kill the demons in Kali Yuga, but he kills the demoniac tendency within the consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya, by his mercy, he is destroying gradually our demoniac mentality, or our rebellious spirit, or our false ego. Srila Prabhupada says, when you practice bhakti, the false ego gradually becomes dissolved. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement and his mission, is that gradually he destroys the demoniac propensity within our consciousness. So that part of us which is rebellious against God, that is gradually being cleansed away. And we should feel that. We should feel as the years go by in devotional service that we are making progress. In one sense, we always feel that we're getting further from the goal. But in another sense, we should feel there's genuine progress. And we're actually developing some Vaishnava character as time goes by. Because we have to remind ourselves continuously, Prabhupada said we are Vaishnava Abbas. Vaishnava bus means you're just a shadow of a Vaishnava. We're not actually devotees yet. Srila Prabhupada, one time the devotees said, some of the devotees are falling down. And Prabhupada said, if they are devotee, if they are Vaishnava, how they can fall down? Because a Vaishnava cannot fall down. Srila Prabhupada cannot fall down. So we're not Vaishnavas yet. Kindly, we're being called Vaishnavas because we wear the tilak on our forehead because we wear it in the sun. So therefore, we are called Vaishnavas. But actually, we are Abbas. Abbas means we are just a reflection of the Vaishnava at this point in time. We're not yet really devotees. So that's being destroyed within us. The Lord is removing that. So especially, if you are having difficulty removing certain obstacles in your heart, certain anattas, then you can especially pray to Lord Nisringhadev to remove these anattas within our heart. So we're very fortunate because this year we will witness the appearance of Lord Nisringhadev within our study, and it may coincide, we'll see what the Lord arranges, with his appearance day, which is in May. And yeah, we'll see what he arranges, but you know, the pastime will, everything will synchronize somehow by his arrangement. Okay. So it is very important for us to pray. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when you go to Mayapur, you need to pray to Lord Nisringadev to remove your anathas so that you can gain adhikara, qualification to approach Radha and Krishna. At this point in time, we cannot approach Radha and Krishna. We can't even approach Gaunisai at this point in time, really. I mean, they're very mercifully accepting our worship, but we're not really serving them yet. But Lord Nisringadev, he can remove those anathas. That is his potency. But you have to pray to him to remove those anathas, which takes a great deal of courage. Because when you go to Nisringadev and say, remove the anathas, then he begins to remove them. It takes a great deal of courage to accept whatever the Lord desires. Because he will rip out those anathas. And you'll see that actually you're still attached to these things. But when you become courageous as a devotee, then you'll pray to him like that and he will assist. So, any points?
So, Madhavya Guru says that actually one should transcend the stage of anatta, because anatta, at that stage, even an impersonal state is there, so one should call that stage, only then you can have development of bhakti in a sequence and go on memory.
Yeah, it's true. The path of bhakti is a gradual process also. So even for a long, long time, even for many decades, we can be removing the anathas. Because the platform of anatta nivritti, it takes a long time to pass through that. So our bhakti is being accepted by Krishna. We are advancing in devotional service. But we progress much more rapidly when we pass the stage of anatta nivritti. Exhibiting his terrible teeth, fierce glance, and frowning eyebrows, terrible to see, he took up his weapon, a trident, and thus began speaking to his associates, the assembled demons. So, Aditya will give us an example of this verse. Can you show us what Hiranyakashipu looked like at this point in time? Huh? Terrible teeth, fierce glance, and frowning eyebrows. Can you show us this? Play the part of Hiranyakashipu? Okay. Maybe on the Shingane's appearance day. Maybe you could show us. Sometimes the kids do a play on that day, so you can show us. O Danavas and Daichas! O Dreamurda! O Triaksha! O Shambhara! And Shatabahu! O Hayagriva, Namuchi, Paka, and Ilwala. O Viprachiti, Poloman, Shakuna, and other demons, all of you, kindly hear me attentively, and then act according to my words without delay. My insignificant enemies, the demigods, have combined to kill my very dear and obedient well-wisher, my brother, Hiranyaksha. Although the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, is always equal to both of us, namely the demigods and the demons, this time, being devoutly worshipped by the demigods, he has taken their side and helped them kill Hiranyaksha. You can read the footnote as well.
Both the demons and demigods understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the Supreme Master, but the demigods follow the Master, whereas the demons defy him. Thus, the demigods and demons are compared to the two co-wives of one husband. Each wife is a sapatni, co-wife, of the other, and therefore the word sapatni is used here. Okay. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, the Lord is equal to all living entities. Since the demigods and demons are both living entities, how is it possible that the Lord was partial to one class of living beings and opposed to another? Actually, it is not possible for the Lord to be partial. Nonetheless, since the demigods, the devotees also strictly follow the Supreme Lord's orders. Because of
sincerity they are victorious over the demons who know that the Supreme Lord is Vishnu but do not follow his instructions. Because of constantly remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the demons generally attain Sayujya Murti after that. The demon Hiranyakashipu accused the Lord of being partial because the demigods worshipped him, but in fact the Lord, like the government, is not partial to all, not partial at all. The government is not partial to any citizen, but if the citizen is law-abiding, he receives abundant opportunities from the state laws to live peacefully and fulfill his real interests.
So what are the points?
Samoham Sarvakrishna.
What does that mean?
He's already equal to one demon.
Any other points?
Many different things you mentioned over here between the demons and the demigods is about obedience. The demigods are following the Lord's instructions and the demons are not. That is the whole point. The Lord actually looking like that would be selling the demons.
Anything else?
So is this statement, because this is something which contradicts the way I have learned Bhagavatam from Sai Guru, in the sense that the demons think that the Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are the same platform, so therefore they worship Lord Shiva and get the boon, so that with that boon they feel that they are equally powerful in order to face Lord Vishnu. They don't think that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Master, therefore they go against him. They think they're all equal, actually, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara, they're all equal. And therefore they say that, well, why should I worship him? I'm worshipping an equal counterpart and I'm receiving the boons and therefore I can oppose Lord Vishnu.
Well, at least Prabhupada is saying it like this at this point in time. So. And maybe that it's both ways, or maybe that's one way or the other. Prabhupada's expressing it like this at this point.
That is difficult, because if I know that you are my Supreme Master, how can I go against you?
Well, I suppose that would be the nature of envy. And it may also be the nature of atheism, that one does not fully believe that. It's a good point. That's a good point. Any other points? So Krishna is partial to the devotees, and this is natural. So he cannot be criticized for being like this. Right? It is a natural psychology of any sentient being or any person to be naturally inclined to those that one loves. That's natural. Just like the example is given, just like if, for example, if the building is on fire, you will run to save your child before you'll save other children. And no one will criticize you for that. Yeah. If someone says, you know, when you pull your child out of the fire, right, and you went in to get your child, even though there was a group of children there, no one's going to say to you when you come out, they're not going to say, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, you should have been equal, you should have been. No, it's natural. You'll never be criticized for that. So similarly, it is natural that Krishna will also favor the devotee. That's natural. So you cannot be criticized. It's just the natural psychology of a person. And Krishna is the original person. So naturally, he will favor the devotee. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that even for a pure devotee, a very advanced body, there will be natural inclination towards one's own family members. Or, Bhaktivinoda Thakur even says, to the country in which you were born. Even for a pure devotee or a very advanced devotee, even if he's born in a particular country or a particular place, just like if you meet someone who's from the same place as you, then automatically you become very inclined towards that person. That's natural. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even for the pure devotees, they'll be like that. If they meet someone from, say, Calcutta, you were born in Calcutta, then naturally there will be an inclination which is there. These things are natural. So for Krishna to have this kind of consciousness, it's not a fault. Someone can't say, oh, Krishna favored the devotees and he did not favor the demons. That's not
an acceptable criticism, because it's natural for Krishna to be like that. Because the devotee reciprocates with him, so Krishna naturally reciprocates with the devotee. Now, Prabhupada says the demons, they attain Sayuja Mukti. So Jagannath Ram Prabhu, you were mentioning last night about the mind body. So I was thinking about it while I was studying that. So yes, they do attain Sayuja Mukti. And Prabhupada does mention that also. They do attain. The Brahmavadis are not decisive about where they want to go to. So they don't necessarily attain Sayuja Mukti. If their desire or their ultimate understanding or their ultimate acceptance of the Supreme is Brahman, then they can attain Sayuja Mukti. Okay. And the Mayavadis, they can also attain Sayuja Mukti. Prabhupada actually says that. If you read his purports, he actually says like that. The Mayavadis will attain Sayuja Mukti. And then one can say, well, there are other statements where it says they go to hell. So then we can reconcile that, because Hanuman says that Sayuja Mukti is hell for a devotee. Because one loses the opportunity to serve Krishna. So there are statements that the Mayavadis will take birth as trees. Because a tree is always searching out for the light. Just like a Mayavadi is looking for the light, the tree is always looking for the light. So sometimes they'll take birth as trees, sometimes they will get Sayuja Mukti, it depends. But they can attain like that. So Prabhupada also says here that the demons, by Krishna's mercy, because they're always meditating on him, then they attain Sayuja Mukti. And the example which is given already is Shishupal. Shishupal attains Sayuja Mukti. So that is the proof of the statements. Any points?
So Sayuja Mukti means they are living in the same
block. No, that's Salokya.
Okay.
Sayuja means to merge into the Brahma Jyoti.
Mm-hmm.
It means Brahma realization.
Okay.
Any other points?
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's translation by Bhanu Swami Maharaj on Dharma Bhutta Prasannatma, there Bhanu Swami Maharaj says that it's only the impersonalist who will feel that, but not the Maharaja.
Could be. I could stand to be corrected. But definitely from what Prabhupada is saying here, Prabhupada is saying the Mayavadis will also get that destination. He does say that the Mayavadis will get that destination.
But the Mayavadis don't believe in form.
The other thing is the Mayavadi isn't in the cosmos, by definition. So
we thought
that it's
below
impersonal,
but impersonal, at least
we
have a conception.
Yeah, but impersonal is an English word. And a Mayavadi is a type of impersonal also. So I could stand to be corrected, but it is there. Prabhupada does mention the Mayavadi attains Sayuja Mukti. He does mention it. So. Because there's places where Prabhupada says the demons and the Mayavadis attain the same destination. He says that. So it is there.
Sayuja Mukti means you lose your identity, merge in lost form. So, but the curse that was given to Jaya and Vijaya was after 3 years they will regain their position in Vaikuntha. It's not Sayuja, which is Salokya. So how can Shishupal got Sayuja Mukti?
Well, if you look at it in totality, then there was another birth which is not mentioned.
So, but once we say Sayuja Mukti, that means he has lost his identity eternally.
Not eternally, because Prabhupada's already said in the last section that they come back to the material world. So it's not eternal. Because Prabhupada said that at the end of the first chapter. He said that they go to Brahma Jyoti, but because of impure intelligence, they come back to the material world again. We discussed that last night. They become philanthropists and that kind of stuff. Any other points?
This quality of Lord Krishna reciprocating, favoring the disciples, but in certain charandaka we say that it is partially impartial. Impartially partial.
He's impartial, but he's also partial. So what is better, impartiality or partiality?
The combination.
Actually, it's not. The highest is partiality. Because you see in Krishna and Vrindavan, Krishna cannot live without the gopis. He cannot live without his associates. So that's partiality, it's not new partiality. Yeah, but then it becomes all philosophical. Then that's not what prema is about. Prema is not about philosophy. I mean, can you imagine speaking to one of the gopis? Krishna actually did that, remember? Krishna became philosophical with the gopis. He said, just meditate on me. They said, don't treat us like this. They said, we're not yogis. Don't start preaching to us. Don't start giving us philosophy. We love you. So when someone loves someone, you don't give them philosophy. It doesn't do anything. Yeah, like I said, you're just analyzing something which is for them. Do you think they sit around analyzing?
It's spontaneous.
Yeah, it's spontaneous. So when you're spontaneous, you don't analyze.
No, I'm not analyzing. They are spontaneous, Krishna is also spontaneous towards them.
But I don't think any of them sit around analyzing it. They don't have Bhakti Vedanta courses. And, you know, they don't all get around and try to analyze it. They just love Krishna. We're so far away from loving Krishna that we just sit around analyzing it. We really don't even understand what it means. So. Any other points?
Can you work on what basis is Hiranyakashipu saying this, that he is always equal and also? Is there quoting philosophy, or does he have there was some experience that Vishnu is non partial?
Well, he's very. He's an exceptionally learned person. Does anyone know about Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha? Are they born from Brahmins? Because in the next birth, hey, what's going on here? What is going on with all these children in this course? How come these children are not sitting down quietly? Hands up if you are sitting down quietly. One, very good. Your brother is sitting quietly, so why are you not sitting quietly? Hands up if you are sitting quietly. Three. You just be quiet. Okay, so I want to see the other kids sitting quietly also. Dhruv is sitting quietly. Yeah, I know, let me see. All these kids are sitting quietly, this is good. So I think everyone should sit quietly. Okay. So at least when he was Ravana, right, in the next lifetime, he was the son of a Brahmana, and he was extremely learned. He was a Brahmana. Ravana was actually born from a Brahmana caste. So he's extremely learned. Yeah, so you can say like that. We can take it for granted that Hiranyakashipu was extremely learned. Right, extremely intelligent. I mean, these are gods. These people are extremely qualified. So he understood these things. Secondly, even though he was covered, still it's Jayan Vijay. So they have this innate knowledge. But because of the arrangement of the law, they have an animosity towards Krishna. They're playing that role like that. But they're extremely learned personalities. So. Any other questions?
Isn't that maybe to try to see the fault in anybody then Vijay? Indicated as a, you know, when there was a King Parishit was asking Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was beating and all that, he said, I don't want to be indicated. I don't know who was doing it. He did not answer.
So what is the point?
Well, the point is, should we criticize anybody in this world?
As a Majjhimadhikari, you have to criticize. Or as a Majjhimadhikari, you have to discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
Or as a senior devotee, you have to criticize the junior devotees. Or in other words, you have to instruct them so they improve.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say that it's right to not criticize or instruct anybody. If you're a senior devotee and you see a junior devotee is doing something which is not right, and you don't say anything, then you're not doing your duty. Oh, that's it. Is that okay? The only person who should not instruct is your husband. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality toward the demons and the demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person now influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees. The demigods, just as a restless child leans towards someone, I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident. And with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too be peaceful. So there is a Vedic aphorism or saying which says, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. As you see the universe or the world, you think everyone else sees it like that. So if you are lusty, you think everyone else is lusty. If you are greedy, you think everyone else is greedy. Now, Hiranyakashipu, because he's a materialist, and he's thinking Vishnu is also a materialist. He has killed my brother. He's just like the example he gives here. He's just like a restless child, running around doing anything whimsically. He's just killed my brother. Who is he? So he's thinking, because he is like that, then he's thinking, okay, Vishnu is also like that. So that is the nature of a materialist. The materialist will always see the same qualities in everyone else. He'll think, because I am like that, then they are also like that. But a devotee, he does not see like that. Okay? A devotee has a higher state of consciousness. He doesn't become affected by the noise of nature. So Hiranyakashipu is criticizing the Lord himself. He's whimsical. But there's no justification for his criticism. It's his own impurities. It's his own impure heart which he is projecting onto the Lord. Okay.
In Gandhi's eye, sees the whole world here.
What is that?
In Gandhi's eye, sees the whole world here.
Yeah. I had jaundice in 1994. Okay. So then, Prabhupada says in the third paragraph, which we'll read, because it's a very instructive paragraph. Jamuna, can you read it?
Hiranyakashipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child, who can be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes and ladoos. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita 9.26, Patram Pushkam Palam Soyam Yome Bhakta Prayasati, Tadaham Bhakta Upakhatam Asnani Payatasmana. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. The Lord accepts the offerings of a devotee because of their transcendental love. Because they are in love with the Supreme Lord, they do not eat anything without offering it first to the Lord. The Lord does not hanker for a small leaf or flower. He has enough to eat. Indeed, He is feeding all the living entities. Nonetheless, because He is very merciful and bhaktavatsala, very favorable to the devotees, He suddenly eats whatever they offer Him with love and devotion. This quality should not be misjudged to be childish. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that He is bhaktavatsala. In other words, He is always extremely pleased with His devotees. As for the word Maya, when used in reference to the dealings of Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees, this word means affection. The actions of the Lord to favor His devotees are not disqualification, but signs of His natural affection.
Any points in this third paragraph?
The Lord often accepts the offering because of transcendental love to be exchanged.
Thank you, God, in the love and the alone, the beauty to make Krishna
Any other thoughts?
Even in a family, if there are six children, the one who obeys the parents is like most, like both the parents. Anyone who is obedient to the parents love them more than their five children.
Really?
Yeah.
Any other points? So Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that we should only accept Krishna Prasad, food which has been offered to Krishna. So this is the standard that we should come to as devotees. We only eat Prasad. So we should understand that you cannot offer wheat bix to Krishna. You cannot offer these non-devotional items to Krishna, either, because they're already prepared by non-devotees. So the actual standard is the devotees, they should prepare the items themselves and offer it to Krishna. If you are going to eat a packet of chips, then understand it's a packet of chips. Right? And then if you're going to offer it to Krishna, then like I told that story, Raja Bihari Prabhu, he is the disciple of Burujan Prabhu. So he was with Burujan Prabhu, they had been in Delhi for a day, doing some, and it was taking so long. So Burujan Prabhu was a little hungry. So he said to Raja Bihari, his disciple, he said, go and get me a packet of chips. So Raja Bihari went and got a packet of chips and brought them to Burujan Prabhu, and then Burujan Prabhu opened them and he started eating them. And Raja Bihari Prabhu was shocked. And he said, aren't you going to offer them? And Burujan Prabhu said, offer them to who? He's not going to offer something that's produced by a non-devotee to Krishna. Like that. So sometimes, these are rare circumstances. The devotees won't normally do like this. But you should understand that these things are not relishable by Krishna. So don't get into the habit of offering your breakfast cereals and these things to Krishna. Or bread which is prepared by non-devotees and these things. They should not be offered to Krishna. Although I know some devotees do this. They do offer. Yeah. Even, you still there?
Incoming call. Can you hear us? Can you hear us now? Sydney?
So press speaker.
Can you hear us now?
On. Press speaker.
Okay.
Can you hear us in Sydney? This is still working. Are you there? Sharanmukhi, are you there? Okay.
Yeah, but once you told us that Srila Prabhupada was traveling and he asked the devotee to buy some kachori from a hawker in the railway station.
Yeah.
So,
Prabhupada did that. He was traveling long distance on a train and then they stopped on the train station and there were some kachoris being cooked. So he said to Tamal Krishnamurti, he said, go and give me some kachoris. So Tamal Krishnamurti went and brought them back. And then he gave them to Prabhupada. And Tamal Krishnamurti said to Prabhupada, he said, are you going to eat them? Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, but they're cooked by this man on the station. You don't even know what his consciousness is like. And Prabhupada said, if they're cooking it hot, and they're cooking it in front of you, and if you purchase it, that will clean the karma. Like that. So it was more like a extraordinary circumstance. It wasn't like a regular thing that Prabhupada was doing. And I actually heard Hari Saurabh say the other day when I was listening, he said the whole time he was with Prabhupada, which was 16 months, from late 75 to early 77, he said he never once saw Prabhupada eat anything which was not prasadam. So maybe in 74 or 73 or something, Prabhupada may have done it a couple of times, travelling here and there. But it wasn't like Prabhupada was making it a habit. Just like, you know, Prabhupada was on the aeroplane, and one time, then Prabhupada asked for, they were offering drinks and things like this. It's gone off today, so. Maybe the train room. So, Srila Prabhupada, he was on the aeroplane, and they were offering drinks, so then Prabhupada, he took some 7-Up. So Prabhupada just, you know, had a few sips and then that was it. So then all around the movement, right, then it was said Prabhupada likes 7-Up. So everyone started drinking 7-Up. But Prabhupada just had a couple of sips. It wasn't like he was just, every time he got on the plane he was drinking 7-Up like that. And actually in the very, very last time when Prabhupada went, in 1977, Prabhupada went to London on that final trip, and Prabhupada was very ill. And he was in first class, and he was lying down because he was so weak he could not even sit up. And then the airline hostess, she said, "Do you want something to drink?" So Prabhupada said, "Some 7-Up." So they poured Prabhupada some, or they gave him a little like glass or something. And then they handed it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had a little sip, and then he passed it to his servant. So then the servant, Upendra Prabhu, he sipped it, because he thought this was Mahaprasad, and he sipped it, and it was champagne. And he said, "Oh my God." And then Tamal Krishna was there, and he said, What? And he said, "They just offered Prabhupada champagne." Prabhupada had a little sip, and then he just handed it to them. Prabhupada probably thought it was 7-Up, you know. But it wasn't like Prabhupada was just drinking these things or eating these things all the time. So he's saying here that we should not eat things which are not offered to Krishna. That should be our standard. As much as possible. I don't know, is anyone in this room who only eats prasadam? All the time? Only prasadam? Is he telling the truth? You only eat prasadam?
Well, they gave up the games to prove that they can't reckon to not only handle the offers, you can read.
Wow, such a good boy. Hey, why don't you be like your brother? Such a good boy. Has anyone here only eats prasad? Okay. Sheikh Gaz says he only eats prasad. Very good. Yeah, Prabhu says he only eats prasad. Very good. So that should be the standard. We should try to come to that standard. We only take prasad.
What we should really be
good
if somebody
is sick? Well, that's what I mean. When you make these kind of commitments, then you don't compromise.
So you should not eat at all at their house? Or should you not go to their house?
At your age, you have a right not to compromise.
I should not go.
Like I'm saying, it's your choice, but at your age, you have a right to say, you know, I've had a whole lifetime, you know, I ate Kellogg's cornflakes, but now I'm not going to do it anymore. So you don't have to feel any pressure. You have no obligation to do it if you don't want to do it. Yeah, but now, you know, your age is there. You've lived your life now. It's their problem, not your problem. If they're offended, that's their problem. You've done all your socializing, all these things. You don't have any obligations now.
Next means
like opposite the temple or something?
No, not opposite the temple, opposite
police station.
No, opposite the Bhakti Hari. Some of these are very renowned in Vrindavan for eating few things.
Yeah.
The same thing is here, right? So what are your
Well, Prabhupada said that everything in Vrindavan is prasad. So it is. It is prasad. It is prasad.
Because I was probability that they do, they just talk to Krishna. And then they basically give it to some cows.
So that's this. But Prabhupada said that anything that is prepared in the Dharma is already prasada. Prabhupada said that. So it's a fact. However, you do have to take into consideration who's cooking it. What is their consciousness? Because you see, some of the people, even though it's Vrindavan, you know, sometimes they're not doing all the right things. I know I stayed in Jagannath Puri 1 year, and I was there for about 3 or 4 days, and the whole time I was in Puri, my mind was disturbed. In Mayapur, my consciousness was okay. In Vrindavan, everything was okay. But in Puri, the whole time I was there. So then, after I thought about it later, my conclusion was, the place we're staying at, where they had a vegetarian restaurant, then obviously the guy who was cooking, there was something wrong. Because, you know, I was chanting my japa on the roof and there were whiskey bottles and things on the roof. So I don't know if it was him, but I know there was something wrong. Because the whole time I was there in Puri, my mind was not peaceful like that. So it was obviously because of the... So even though everything in the Dharma is prasadam, but you have to take these things into consideration also. Prabhupada also said the cause of all disease is eating outside of the temple. So even though you're in Vrindavan or you're in Mayapur or you're in Puri, you still have to be very careful. Because if you eat outside the temple, the cleanliness standards are not so high. So even though technically everything is prasadam, it still there's a danger. Which is there. And I personally got hepatitis, I got jaundice, because I ate outside the temple in 1994. And I only ever did it once. One time. Because normally I don't do that. I don't eat outside the temple.
So Indian people can eat that.
What's that?
They're not affected by outside.
Yeah.
Not as a stomach.
Less affected. Less affected. Okay. Even when I go to Vrindavan these days, like I don't eat it outside. Definitely not regular. Yeah, maybe I'll have a sweet or something from some. Yeah, but there's only a few places I'll eat the sweets as well. Those places are very reputable, so. You know. And if you take those things, because it is Vrindavan, then you can offer them to Krishna like that, or you can offer them to one of the deities or something like that. But the point is, Prabhupada is saying that we should be strict about what we eat.
You like sugar cane juice?
What's that?
You like sugar cane juice in the morning?
Yeah. Sugar cane juice is very good for the liver. Like that. In Ayurveda, it says so, it's very good. And dob, coconut, they're also very good. Not for the liver, but they're also very good for the health.
So in South Indian culture, we say that Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, three times, and then Sri Vishnu is not important to be offered.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's working. Sydney's back. Probably got a few minutes to go. So, Srila Prabhupada said that. He said if we take fruit, we can just chant Hare Krishna or Sri Vishnu, and that will offer the fruit. So if you take fruit or water like that, you can just chant. Prabhupada said actually you can offer that in your mind, those things. But grains, they must be offered properly, and they should be cooked by devotees. Even I know they have a vegetarian pizza shop down there in St. Kilda. Mr. Vegetarian, the pizza shop in St. Kilda, there's that vegetarian. So I even know devotees who get those pizzas and they offer that to their deities. But I say to them, I would not do that. If you're going to eat it, that's your choice. But don't offer it to your deity. And then they said to me, well, nothing happened yet. Everything was okay. And it's true, because they've been doing it for many years, so it's true. Nothing happened, like there was no major... So maybe the deity is accepting, I don't know, but... Yeah. But I wouldn't do that to Giriraj. You know, I wouldn't get a pizza from down there and then offer it to, you know, Giriraj, please accept it, like that. Because it's not cooked by another devotee. Now, only if it's cooked by a devotee, I'll offer something to Giriraj. Anyway, Prabhupada's making the point here, so you should take this point seriously. Try to apply it in your life as much as you can.
What if the fruits are cut
by the religious? Very bad. No, you just make sure the a fruit is cut with a good knife, a clean knife.
Prabhupada,
should
we go for the medical meeting? And
I
just
order
I just want fruits.
Some fruits, yeah.
Basically, was the Prabhupada said?
But basically the point is everything in Kali Yuga is contaminated. Oh no, Hari Sauriprabhu was making this point. Mm-hmm. Basically everything in Kali Yuga is practically contaminated. Yeah, that's the point. That's the point. But like everything practically we eat, oh, even the foods we get from the supermarket, we all buy yogurt, right? Right? But it's completely prepared by non-devotees. Well, not everyone buys it. Maybe you make a yogurt, but most of us buy yogurt, but it's all prepared by non-devotees. The cheese, most of us eat cheese, but it's all prepared by non-devotees. Practically everything is contaminated. Stop eating. All move to Hare Krishna Valley.
Even the fruits are contaminated,
the whole fruit. At our farm, at the moment on my tree, I have plums and apples, and it is pure. And if you come there, you can offer them to your deity, and we will take the prasad.
Yeah,
and we will only eat fruits. When the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry out. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul will lose the source of their life and wither away. So for devotees, if we leave Krishna, what will happen to us? Yeah, we dry up. Like that. So if we leave the association of devotees, what will happen to us? So, being in the association of devotees is intense. Because what happens is your false ego becomes purified. When you associate with devotees, it means your anarthas become manifest. Your defects become seen. So sometimes we think, it's better that I stay away from the devotees. And then it's not so intense. But, if you're not with devotees, your devotional... Turn off your phones. If you're not with devotees, then your devotional attitude, it dries up. Because we're not strong enough to be away from devotees. So even though being with devotees is intense, it's purifying for us. So we should always stay in the association of devotees, no matter how intense it is for our false ego. Okay, last verse. While I am engaged in the business of killing Lord Vishnu, go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engage in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regulative vows and charity. Destroy all of the people thus engaged. So what is the defect of the earth at this point in time? There are no brahmanas and no kshatriyas. We don't have qualified leaders. I was speaking about this in the class this morning in the temple. That we don't have qualified kshatriyas, we don't have qualified brahmanas, and look at the earth at this point in time. Right, there are so many problems. Because when the brahmanas are qualified, when the kshatriyas are qualified, the earth becomes peaceful. Now Prabhupada said when someone walks into one of our temples, it is like Satya Yuga. Because we have qualified brahmanas walking around, and we have qualified, you could say chaturis, or qualified leaders. When the temple president is qualified, and he's like a chaturia. You see, sometimes Amitabha carries his sword, wears his turban. So he's like a qualified chaturia. It means when the leader is qualified, and when there are qualified brahmanas within the community, then the temple is like Satya Yuga. It becomes peaceful. And this is the problem with the earth at this point in time, because we don't have qualified leaders, then the earth is not peaceful. Human society is not becoming prosperous. It's becoming the opposite. So, Hiranyakashipu, he's demoniac, because everything was going nicely on earth, but he wanted to disrupt that. That's the nature of the demons. They want to disrupt. Right? If the devotees are making progress, they want to cause some problems. So Prabhupada said, the more we preach, the bigger the demons get. So that's a sign that our preaching is successful. The demons are becoming stronger and stronger. If we face more opposition, this means the demons are becoming stronger, which means that our preaching is becoming more successful. So, any points?
So, if the preaching is strong, then how can the demons become stronger?
Because Prabhupada said, the more that we preach, then the greater the opposition will become. It means the demons will come out. Any other points?
The
statement says, go down to the planet Earth. Does that mean that the last time he says above Earth, because now there we find that they say that Lord Asmodev children are still in the school there?
Yeah.
In Ahobalam, which is in South India, they say that's the place where the Lord came out of the pillar. When Prabhupada was here on the planet, there was debate about that, because it says here that this pastime took place in the heavenly planets. And then, Hari Sauriprabhu actually asked Prabhupada about that. Because it says in the Bhagavatam is on the heavenly planets, but in South India they say it is in Ahobalam. So Prabhupada did not make any, like, definite like that. But he said we have to consult the Puranas. Okay. There's some connection to Lord Nisringadeva in Ahobalam, but whether or not the actual pastime took place there or not. Or maybe it happened in different yugas or something like that. Even in Mayapur, there is that place called Nisringapalli, where after defeating Hiranyakashipu, he washes the blood from his fingernails in the Mandakini, in the Ganges, which used to flow there. And that lake is still there. So you can take bath in that water that Nisringadeva touched with his own hands. Have you been there? Have you taken bath there? What's the use of gong if you don't take fire? Did Archim?
Yeah. Where is this
river? It's in Mayapur. It's on the other, it's in Godrundwi, on the other side of the river. If you come there with me, I'll push you in. Hey, I took Vrishnivamsha there. Were you there, didn't you?
Nice.
Yeah. Vrishnivamsha came there and nearly drowned. He was in that lake, he started drowning. I think right over a month ago to go and get him. The water wasn't even deep.
What's
the name? Because I started going, right over my head, the swimming didn't.
What's the name?
Nisringa Pali. Pali means kund, or lake, like that. So. Okay. So, for all Pali keys.
Yeah.